Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome, everybody, to Snark Monkey Special Edition, Snark Boys for Life. I don't know. I try and come up with
Bad snark?
Bad snark?
Bad snark.
Bad snark.
Bad snark for life.
Bad snark for life.
I like
that. Bad snark. Bad snark. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad snark. Bad snark. What they gonna
We have a small group of snarkers today who have seen in theaters this weekend, opening weekend, Bad Boys for Life.
Woo!
Yep. Yeah. And we'll start to my left. It's Chris the McGann McGann.
Oh, hello.
Who couldn't have been more excited. This is one of his most anticipated films of 2020. If you listened to that edition last weekend
and
on the Snark Monkey, it was his number one on the list. Jason E. Kelly is back. JK is here.
What is crackin'?
And would you please introduce our first time ever snarker in the room.
I'd like to introduce all you snark monkeys to my beautiful wife, Teo Besta Ashanafi.
Hello, hello.
Hello,
thanks
Teo.
For having me.
So much has been said about Teo. So much has been heard about Teo. So much has been thought about Teo. Mm-hmm. And now we get her in the room.
Got her on the mic.
And live.
By the way, not a bad movie to have a female perspective on, which is kind of what I was hoping for, because when I heard you guys were both going to go see it together, I thought, well, I'd love to hear T.O. rip it apart. Turns out there are some interesting, strong female roles in this, and I can't wait to hear it from you. And I will add this just as a little background, and I'll just start because I'm the host of this damn thing. My wife actually went ahead and saw it with me, and it's not a movie she would have ever chosen to see ever.
Okay.
I'm not even sure I would have chosen to see this movie. I don't have the investment anywhere near what McGann does. I don't think I have the same interest level that you do, JK. I can tell you I saw the first one because why wouldn't you see Will Smith and Martin Lawrence in Bad Boys?
Right.
If I saw the second one, I'd remember nothing about it. My memory is that it got such poor reviews from the beginning that I kind of went, maybe I saw it on cable at some point.
You probably saw it on a cable. TBS.
Which is crazy because I like the second one better than the first one.
I enjoyed the
second
one.
Really? Yeah. I liked it. I mean, I'm a fan of the whole.
The whole trilogy is
great. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
I will tell you.
The first one's rough to go back and watch because I just did it.
Yeah.
Like that's Michael Bay's first feature.
Film.
And it shows.
Martin was the star.
Yeah, 100%.
Will was not the guy.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I will tell you that from my perspective today, having literally just seen this thing, I think it's a better movie than either one of those two.
It is.
I agree.
It is a more enjoyable film.
It's a great
story. And I think the asset is it doesn't have the over-the-top heavy hand of Michael Bay.
Right.
Influencing maybe, and the palette is the same, and it's got that, Bruckheimer, push it to the limit thing.
Right.
But it is handled so deftly by these two directors who I know nothing about.
Yeah. And what you didn't have this time, which I loved, was the shot. That Michael Bay always does.
Yeah.
For those of you who are listening to this, which is all of you because it's an audio medium.
Yeah, hopefully.
Jason Kelly just circled around in front of the microphone in a way that was, and by the way, they kind of did, but it wasn't.
They did the rise up and
But they did.
And pose. But I don't remember them doing the full circle around.
I think that's the thing. I think this thing was so not in your face as much as Michael Bay movies tend to be. And that just, because that stuff always took me out of it. McGann, you're the kid in the candy store. This was, as we learned last episode, this was part of your adolescence.
Yeah.
This movie had a deep impact on,
It did. It really changed the way I saw law enforcement. I will say, going back, I will say that I had forgotten it was set in Miami, because when you live in the middle of the country, you just assume everything's in L.A. So in my memory, it was like an L.A. movie.
And you were telling us you went back and watched
Went back and watched the first two back-to-back.
For continuity's sake.
Just continuity, and just to make sure I was prepared for any of the jokes, like, you know, or like any of the cameos, like Reggie showing up was such a delight.
That was the best part of the movie.
Yeah,
for me.
And honestly, I was watching him, and I couldn't decide if he was a great actor who managed to capture every beat of what he did the first time we met him, or if he was a very bad actor. And they're like, no. You do these three lines exactly the same way, and he's like, I think this is the only way I know how to do things, and he just like did it. But it was such a
great surprise,
specific and great surprise that I was
and it
delighted.
Took me a while to recognize the fact that that guy was in the first one and as a much younger
younger version of himself.
Look, we're talking about a franchise, if you can call it that. I mean, it's been so spread out, even between one and two, it was like six, seven years. And it has been 15 since the second one. And Teo, we'll get. I just have to say the chemistry between these two was.
Yeah,
I mean they are talking about it.
Yep.
They are talking about it like it was always there. But that's what you say when you're promoting a movie. But oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Like these guys have been hanging out every year since it was going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Were you digging on that?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, I think their chemistry was exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Nothing shifted.
Yeah.
They both of them did a phenomenal job in bringing back their respective roles and relationship and the dynamic between the two. Going back to the Reggie scene, though, that was my favorite part in the whole movie. I have to say that.
How is that your favorite part of the whole movie?
I was so excited to see Reggie again because of the joke behind it the first one.
And that was the biggest joke
of that episode of the films.
Yeah. That was actually the biggest joke.
That was the biggest joke.
Remind everybody what that was.
So
when I say that, remind me, because I don't remember.
McGann, was in the first one or the second one?
I think it's the second one. I'm pretty sure it's the second
one.
I think it was.
Because it is about Martin protecting his daughter.
His daughter,
But Will Smith comes in hard.
Yeah. So it's hard. Martin protecting his daughter.
I think I might have seen the second one.
Reggie knocks on the door, and Will's at the house, and Mike Lowry's at the house. He's this young boy's coming to take Martin's daughter out on a date. Mike Lowry's like, what? Hell no. And so they do a scene. We start on the back of Reggie's head, and they open the door, and Mike and Martin and
Marcus and Mike
go in on this young 16-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And ripping him to pieces.
Will's just like,
it's like an interrogation.
Yes. Yeah, it's interrogation, but it's like
with guns
jail,
out.
Guns out.
Right,
like,
yeah. Okay.
Will just got out the clink.
Just got out the clink.
Holding the gun in his face. Like, man, I'm going to
shoot you. And you want fuck and all that. Just going off on him.
Yeah.
The kids, I don't think this actor knew they were going to do that.
Because when
they reverse it and they show his face, you could tell he's actually really scared, and I think he got a different script.
Yeah.
And that whole scene, I heard, was improvised.
That kind of makes sense to me now.
I believe it.
How'd you feel about Bad Boys for Life, JK?
I absolutely loved the story. It took a minute for it to kind of get going and get out of the speeches about how much we love each other and appreciate each other and all the old guy jokes. Because I've seen that through Lethal Weapon 4.
Yeah.
Right. We've been through that journey. And I guess now, because I'm in the same age range as those guys are, I don't feel whatever 50 is supposed to feel like. I don't feel that energy.
Right, right.
But once they got past that and started telling the story and started getting into the minutiae and the details of the plot points, I was riveted. I was leaning in. I could not stop. I was paying attention to the sound. I was paying attention to the cinematics. Yeah. I was paying attention to the way they shot it. I was really grateful that Michael Bay only made... Are we at spoilers yet?
Oh, you know what? This is going to be a spoiler episode. Okay. There's, yeah. It's impossible to talk about.
I was grateful to see Michael Bay included, mm-hmm. yeah. but not behind the camera.
Yep.
He played. He has a cameo. He as a quick little cameo. An intro DJ, yeah, essentially.
Absolutely.
At the wedding.
And what I also noticed, though, was, and I don't know if y'all picked up on it, was it seemed like Martin was working a little bit.
Yeah.
It seems like he was a little bit kind of rusty and getting his chops back. And it kicked in the latter act where he finally kind of showed up. And in the first act, I was going, what is he doing? He looks like he's just a little rusty.
It feels a little. I felt like there were some scenes, especially in more dramatic scenes, where he was a little labored. And when he's just kind of bantering with Will, that mm-hmm. seems real natural. Mm-hmm. But I agree. I think there. But I don't know that I've ever looked at Martin Lawrence and gone, what a great actor Lawrence is.
Right. No, but he did the best.
But you're right. I think once he got it in the rhythm of it, who knows what kind of continuity they shot this thing in.
Yeah.
I think you got to give him a little bit of a pass because what have we seen him in?
No, I mean, that was his best dramatic work I've ever seen him in.
Yeah. Right.
The young kid that's playing the nemesis.
Oh, he was great. Oh,
he's going to have a huge career. He's going to be phenomenal.
Bad Boys 4, for sure.
For sure, it's coming back.
Yeah.
Completely love that.
Yeah. Latia Carrion Moss was great.
Yeah, and then the woman that played his mom, she was
scary as heck.
I loved her.
Fire.
And I spent a lot of time, Paolo Nunez.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time going, where was she in previous? But she wasn't.
She wasn't.
She was not.
That was a created relationship.
That was a new storyline. Yeah.
But man, she was fun to
watch.
Fantastic.
We'll talk about those characters in a little bit. Let's go over real quick the story and kind of back to what you said, Jason. I have to say that I was expecting the older guy jokes. Mm-hmm. I was expecting maybe the camaraderie and the chemistry to be a little forced. Mm-hmm. I actually found the way I was expecting the minivan joke. Mm-hmm. Just kind of knew those were coming.
Sure. Here we go. Yeah.
I have to say they handled those almost as if we know the audience is expecting them. Mm-hmm. So let's drop them in, but give them something extra.
I
feel like they handled it. Like in particular, I thought one of the most affecting scenes, just from a comedy standpoint, was the cross-cutting between Will getting ready for work and Martin getting ready for retirement. I thought that was
hilarious.
A great montage sequence.
Yeah.
And
I
was LOLing in the middle of that.
Great.
I mean, I think we all expected that, and maybe they overplayed it just a touch but I didn't feel like that was the impetus for the whole thing. It was about family,
sure.
Which I took a little issue with the story at the beginning because I was kind of spending most of the time going, why do we have to make it about a personal thing about Mike when I'd just rather see a good like cop plot.
Right.
But as it went along, I kind of turned the corner on it because mm-hmm.
The mythology of Mike Lowry.
Yeah,
it had
a
deeper resonance than I expected.
It did.
What were some other things that struck you, McGann?
There were a lot of things that struck me. The motorcycle chase on the highway I thought was great. That was a clap out loud moment for most of the theater when I saw it.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Was it Bible Bad Boys for Life?
Mm-hmm.
Bad Boys of the Bible was a nice jump.
That was a great jump.
I was a little surprised by the mid to late game nemesis reveal. Of the like specifics of their relationship. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
I also really appreciated that they called Ammo the High School Musical of Cops with Vanessa Hudgens being right in there. there was a lot of very common things that you see in movies, but they took them and like handled them really masterfully. And mm-hmm. so many of the like old guy running slow, being family jokes have been set up since the first Bad Boys. They didn't feel out of place or forced or like really like it was like yes, you're old because Martin Lawrence has always been like the butt of why are you driving so slow? Why are you moving so slow?
Right. Yeah,
that's how you drive. That's how you shoot. Kind of jokes in this series.
In the Odd Couple aspect of that whole relationship, he's always been a little more the fuddy duddy and not the and they had to kind of win him over to keep him on the case, that sort of thing. So that relationship was always there.
Always there.
I
really enjoyed the Ammo team.
Oh,
I knew that they were going to be high tech. I knew that they were going to be cutting edge. it was fun to see them hold their space with these guys.
Right.
Because Will's a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah. Right.
Like,
yeah.
No matter what, if you've ever met him, you've ever been around him, you've ever seen him, what you see is what you get. And when you're next to him, you go, oh, you're kind of a regular guy, until he flips a switch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that energy, he is the black hole in the room. He sucks all the energy into the room.
Right, right.
And only people that get it are the ones that go get it. What? And they, Ammo Team, held their own across the board.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved that, because that's hard to do for really young actors that don't have the level of experience that he's getting.
Yeah, that was well cast, and it was also well executed, because I was also afraid they were going to fall into that trope, which we've seen a million times, which is, okay, here's the older guys. They've got their outdated methods. They are even saying, you know, the old school version of being a cop. So I thought it was going to be this super high-techy, you know, look at us solving all the problems quicker. And there's just a tiny bit of that. But they went very quickly into collaboration, mm-hmm. and recognition, yeah. of knowing each other all the way through the end. I mean, even though we needed to center on these two guys because they are clearly going to be the focus of this, the guys coming in to save the day or enhancing or being a part of the team, it never felt overplayed. It never felt in the way. They felt like they were doing their job, mm-hmm. properly, mm-hmm. and he's recognizing where it could be an asset. And
they recognized where it was time for them to step up,
right.
and actually get physical,
yeah.
and exert some violence, yeah. On the scene. And that was the part that I really appreciated, is that each, you know, there's always the big battle between Gen X and millennials of, well, this is the way we used to do it.
Right.
The millennials are going, well, this is better. And there's always this rift, but we are also these two bridge generations. And to me, they exemplified the bridge in the way they ended up solving the problems, mm-hmm. and the way each one was willing to use the other's way of doing something to get the job done.
Yeah.
Will 100%. Shooting that rubber bullet and popping an old boy on the forehead,
yeah.
and he going and he looking at the gun like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Before he didn't like it, was beautiful.
Right.
Oh, the blonde dude, the big dude jumping up and finally fighting, seeing Vanessa Hudgens pull some great looking stunts.
Great stunts.
Oh,
yeah.
That slide across the floor.
Yep.
And
yep.
I went, oh, yeah. look at Vigo. She's shooting motherfuckers up here.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great.
It was great.
I loved it. So
it was great.
They managed to incorporate all the tropes and kind of the expectations of what you thought was going to happen in, mm-hmm. this, and then sidestep the standard.
That's right. What I was going to say is, I think they did a really good job with balancing every aspect of the movie,
right.
from mm-hmm. the old guy jokes to a really strong storyline that's new that you weren't really expecting, to then transitioning between the fight scenes and, you know, the blow up scenes, and then the scenes that are just needed to be there, the heartfelt scenes, mm-hmm. to the new guys versus the old guys joke, you know,
right.
in terms of how fluid the movie was. I think they just did a really good job across the board.
Give me an idea of what you feel about the female characters. There are at least two major ones here.
Yeah.
And I would say in the past, I mean, weigh in on this real quick, McGann.
Yes, it's Vanessa Hudgens in the room. I'm ready to generally weigh in on female characters.
Let's say three female characters. No, but you watched the first two.
I did.
And my impression, if I remember correctly, especially in one, is that maybe female characters were not well-grounded, and they were usually used as window dressing.
I don't even know why Taya Leone was in the first one, truthfully.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, she was in the first one?
Yeah. She was
the third lead.
Mike was, like, friends with this call girl sex worker, and it was like her college roommate was in town visiting her. She was an out of work photographer.
Yeah,
and
she's on the poster. It's weird. It's like, but we barely remember her.
She just got done doing Deep Impact.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. true.
She was the bigger of.
But yeah, she didn't really do much.
So how was your feeling here in terms of the characters that they did portray? Because we've got the bad guy as a bad girl.
Yeah.
We've got kind of the somewhat of an internal nemesis from the standpoint of we need to do it our way. And that's, again, yeah. Paola Nunez, who I'm not super familiar with. Mm-hmm. I had to look her up. She's actually an actress and director, mm-hmm. from Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
so she's got an interesting background.
She was
great.
So good.
And Vanessa Hudgens, who kind of shows a little action chops. Mm-hmm. Were they well represented from your perspective?
I think so. I think they represented each of them in their own powerful ways. You know, so it felt like when they came into the scene, you felt their power. You know, and it was a really good balance. Again, going back to the whole balance theme is when you see both Martin Lawrence and Will Smith on the scene, and then you see these women leads that are also in the scene, it doesn't favor one versus the other. So you felt their presence. You felt the bad guy's mom's energy of it. It was rage, and it was a little scary and fearful, and you're like, oh, okay, this woman's a little psychotic, but okay, good, go.
Yeah.
Like a woman scorned, man. Yeah. She was out for blood.
I felt like that was dicey territory in how they were going to make her so bad, what her motivation was. But they gave her these interesting layers. One, that she's a witch.
I was hoping there wouldn't be
a witch without a cop.
Yeah, that was the best.
Gotta wrap that
shit. Yeah. So good.
And even in the very beginning, because I didn't understand what was going on when they were in the jail scene.
Oh, yeah, me neither.
And I was like, why is she rocking back and forth? Is this going to be like one of those OD scenes again, right? Yeah. That's what I thought would happen. And then all of a sudden she pulls a knife out of her hair, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, this woman
Mommy
is no joke.
Bad with that blade.
Yeah,
she was. She is no joke.
She was doing some Hannibal Lecter shit.
Yes.
Straight
up,
man. Yeah. And she was enjoying that.
Girl. Yes.
I was like, oh.
Again, they took kind of the trope of like you know, these two jilted female lovers kind of set up in the background in a lot of movies, right? With Paola Nunez and the bad guy. They both were ex-lovers of Mike Lowry.
And they
got into direct confrontation, but they did it in such a fun, like, non-traditional way that it didn't feel like they were actually fighting over him. They were really just like both there to like stake their claim in the world,
right?
Which was fantastic.
They were fighting over the principle,
right?
Yeah,
not
right.
the person,
yeah,
right. Which was really good.
I'd say all the way around. And again, I think we've all said it. There are so many things here that are so familiar and also could have been so rote and could have suffered from sequelitis times. Three, whatever, which I generally
Star Wars.
Generally, Bad Boys 2 was considered that Michael Bay trying to top himself, and especially with, you know, over the top action and that sort of thing. That everything about this movie was kind of finely balanced, as you said, Tio, because it could have at any point gone off the. And I'm not saying that every joke worked and every little piece of banter worked. But it was really a funny movie. I mean, that's the thing that elevates this above some of these other big action films, franchises especially, is that you kind of have to buy into these guys being buddies and being at each other and needling each other, and also these big personas in Martin Lawrence and especially Will Smith now. And they were so much fun to watch and listen to, and they really elicited genuine laughter doing the bickering thing that we've seen them do so much now.
Yeah. And I mean, again, it's not new, right?
It's not new. JK brought it up. It's Lethal Weapon. It's Lethal Weapon. We've seen that.
In a lot of ways, but it's done in such a great way. And like I said this as a joke earlier, but I thought it during the movie that this is a movie about legacy. It's a movie about growing older with grace in a lot of ways, and like where you want to leave your mark on the world versus like you're continuing to chase your own glory and own tail. Mm-hmm. And that to me felt like what the first Star Wars, The Force Awakens, was trying to get to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they did it. They did so much fan service there that they lost the story, especially as they got into Last Jedi, that I really was like, God, this is what Star Wars was trying to deal with Legacy.
Right.
But Martin Lawrence and Will Smith just knocked it out of the park in one movie.
I mean, I don't think they're walking in with as much baggage
as Star Wars, but
I think there's an expectation. And for somebody like me who had like zero investment in going to see this movie other than I wanted to be able to talk about it with you guys, I was actually going to do a bit where I was like, I said I was going to go see it, but I snuck into Little Women instead, so we can compare Bad Boys for Life to Little Women if you want to make that the episode. And maybe because I didn't have the best expectations necessarily, but I will tell you that Michael Bay movies just always left me cold, and I stopped going to see him. I think I saw two Transformers.
That's all you need to see.
He was the perfect person for Transformers 1 to launch that franchise.
Yeah, I guess so.
But where he's strong on car chases and explosions and shootout scenes. He's really thin on emotional connectivity and relationship. And you have to have both.
Yeah.
You have to have all of those elements, especially when you have this much investment made in these two characters. And, you know, where Martin has kind of slowed down his craft, Will never really stopped. He took a break during his 40s, but he still was making films.
Yeah.
And one of the they've done a lot of promos for this. And one of the things that was really great to see is I think we're seeing Will getting ready to step into, like, obviously the next phase of his career.
Right.
But he's a consummate filmmaker. He's extremely particular about what it is that he does. And he specifically said in an interview, they waited that he, I should do an impression of him, but I'm not going to.
Oh, well, you can't tease it and not do it.
But he said, because I might mess it up. And then if I mess it up, then anyhow.
We can edit it out.
Yeah.
Okay, so what it was is that Larry,
yeah.
What it was is I wanted to make sure that that there was enough time between the films that I actually had a story that was soup to nuts that I could tell for Bad Boys 4. I didn't want to do, I didn't want to do a cash grab because, you know, it's what I've done sometimes in the past with some of my films. It just didn't play out the way I wanted them to. And so I said, this time, no, I'm Will Smith, and I'm going to go ahead and do it right.
Damn, that's a lot to cut out, Chris.
That's my fault. You know,
that was
fault.
Very good. Let's
it
hear
wasn't
it for
that good.
Jason Kelly.
It was not that good.
That's Jason E. Kelly.
It's not that good.
As Will Smith.
Not that good.
Substantially better than any Will Smith impression I could have done. I will give
it's like
you.
A cross between.
But you know, he did admit that in some of the in interviews he was doing that he said, you know, in the past, I've told you guys that you will love some of the movies that I've done, knowing that you wouldn't love them. But we put a lot of time and attention and intention into this, whether from the storyline perspective, but wholeheartedly the whole movie. You will genuinely love this movie. But,
as we talk right now, it has been raking in the dough at the box office.
But see, here's what I think is beautiful, and I think any filmmaker in the game that is dealing with tent poles that have existed for an extended period of time, the future story lies in the past. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go and tell one of these stories today, you better find a seed of an idea that existed or exists in the previous films and go, what is this and what is this now about? And start fleshing it out.
Yeah.
And then you end up with another film that adds richness to the other films that already exist versus harvesting those films to go and try and make fruit out of fruit that's already been eaten.
Yeah.
Go back and find a seed and grow something from that. In doing that with this film, they created a whole new life for the franchise where I'm envisioning Will coming back with his son and Ammo and working together on some big case. And that will be his sign off as a member of the Bad Boys for Life pack. And then Ammo and his kid, they'll go off and do two or three more films. Mm-hmm. And they'll all be interesting. We'll be right there watching and completely enthralled. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a perfect handoff. And we'll see the salute from the old to the new. And it'll be done around a storyline and a plot that makes sense. It has teeth. You have somebody that can carry it and a team that can carry it. And you don't feel like the first three were robbed or stolen from or what's the word I'm looking for? Degraded anyway.
Yeah.
Although I think in the sixth one, they're going to bring back the dead mom, and she's going to be a representative of all Mexican drug lord cartels. And then she's going to have to fight like the granddaughter of Martin Lawrence. And I think that because
actually,
they're like a dyad.
She'll go toe-to-toe with Gabrielle Union's character.
Oh,
it would be nice to see Gabrielle Union come back.
Yeah, no.
I was wondering if she'd make an appearance in this at all.
No, not at all.
Clearly, they agree with you, JK, because I think all it took was like Thursday night box office before they announced that Bad Boys 4 has been greenlit, essentially.
Oh, it's greenlit. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, they clearly set it up to be in the movie, but by chance, I guess they probably had an out if it just outright bombed. But the word of mouth on it's really good.
Yeah.
Critics are being very kind to it. All the things we talked about in here are being responded to because, and I think these directors deserve a really big shout out.
I think one of the things that I loved about it is the point that Jason just made about it was the evolution story of Mike Lowry.
Yep.
How he got created and how this woman gave him the swag, taught him the walk, showed him the attire, and how to bring sexy into it.
Yeah.
You
know? Like a drug dealer.
Yeah. And it wasn't like it was a full-on origin story. We didn't need to see the whole origin story.
But now we understood.
And it was such a surprise.
It was a complete surprise.
I mean, and now he has to kind of reckon with that. That's kind of what made me who I am. How does that affect moving forward? Do I hold on to that?
Really great way. It's Will winking at himself
coming off of
Fresh Prince, where he was doubted. The industry wasn't checking for him. He was kind of corny. He was who he was. And what I love about him is he's always been who he was. He just got some swag. And so it's him kind of winking at that guy, at that version of himself.
Right.
And giving us this origin story of not only Mike Lowry, but this is kind of how Will went and transitioned from being the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air to box office, you know.
Yeah, Will Smith.
Will Smith.
Because Bad Boys was his first thing after Fresh Prince, wasn't it? Or was Wild West?
It was his first big blockbuster.
Okay.
Let me mention these directors again.
Oh, yeah, please.
Adil El Arbi. I'm going to get these wrong. Adil El Arbi and Bilal Fallah.
Great.
Of course.
They're fantastic.
Because that's who they are. And we know or don't know them because why? Because we probably haven't seen a lot of Belgian television or movies yet.
Is that where they're from?
Yes.
That's
and
brilliant.
They've been
that's
a team awesome. For a while as I... The little bit I know about them, they've been working together for a minute.
But not that much. What an interesting choice. And again, one of the reasons I think this movie is really successful and doesn't just kind of look like the cash grab movie is that because...
But it is grabbing lots of cash.
Well, for some... I mean, there is somebody at an executive level who's going, hell yeah, we're going to make shitload of money on Bad Boys 3.
Now I'm Mike Lowry. Or
somebody, it's a cash grab. But to pick these guys out of the only movie that really has kind of gotten released, I think, here in the States is a film called Black, a Belgian crime film. Mm-hmm. Not familiar with it, don't know anything about it. What a leap to take on these guys. And by the way, again, one of the things that I felt so refreshing about it is that the action set pieces are great, and they were really well done.
Yeah.
But it never felt like they were doing the Michael Bay thing, I'm sorry to bag on the guy, where it was so impossibly implausible over the top that you just kind of go, well, that was fun to watch, but...
That's very Michael.
Right.
Some of this was... I mean, it's crazy, but it's kind of grounded at the same time.
Yeah. Well, it's because they didn't
try... It's so beautifully executed.
They didn't try to insert the camera into the middle of the action where stuff is just bouncing right past you. And Mike's got, to his credit, he pushed the limits on what's possible with shooting stunt scenes.
Right.
And some of them have been fantastic. But that was very much of the time. Yeah, completely.
Right. But
we've kind of grown past it.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. It's hard to watch.
Yeah.
But these guys did a fantastic job.
And it ties to the balance piece again, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Everything in this movie, I think, goes back to that idea of it's all balanced. There's enough hot for the cold. There's enough drama for the jokes. Mm-hmm. There's enough old guy versus new guy. You know, it was just the balance was really good and well executed.
Yeah, the script is credited to Chris Brimmer, Peter Craig, and Joe Carnahan, who has been kind of working more in TV lately and hasn't directed anything major motion picture wise in a while.
No, he did a movie last year.
That's what I meant. He did a movie last year.
It was basically like a Latino version of Batman.
El Chicano. Yeah.
Because I worked with his producer or co-director. I worked with him on Arrow. And I saw that they had made that film, and I was like, yo, this actually looks good.
Here's a really fun fact about our buddies, our brand new buddies, Adil and Bilal, who, by the way, I'm really excited to see what else they do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They are now tapped to direct Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Okay. Really?
Oh, okay.
That's
now,
a good one.
Now, think about what we just talked about with Bad Boys for Life.
Yeah.
And we're kind of trotting similar territory here with an aging cop action kind of thing, comedy thing.
Eddie Murphy's just coming back to it like Martin Lawrence
But I kind of feel like he's going to be in good hands because as long as they're not just repeating themselves, they're going to have similar issues there because we've got a very specific idea of what Axel was like and will be like. And I'm curious to see how that goes.
No, I think it might work. I mean, look, let's keep it 100. Will's last handful of films have not landed the way he wanted them to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not by lack of good choices. When you had the opportunity to do a really groundbreaking action film with Ang Lee, you go, that should be something.
Yeah, that should work.
And it was
You want to make me into an animated pigeon? Why not? That should work.
That's right. Spies in disguise.
Oh, that's right.
In theaters now.
Sometimes when you're making the transition from 40-something to 50-something and the audience has changed and you're considered Jaden and Willow's dad. Right?
Yeah.
Like, really? You think people consider Will Smith that?
The people in his son daughter's generation look at him as their dad, not Will Smith.
Oh.
Because they don't know him musically.
Ouch.
They don't 20-year-olds don't know him. Teenagers, 20-year-olds, they don't know him musically. Yeah. They don't know his films the way we know his films.
Right.
Because
And the nostalgia for the TV show is people who grew up with
exactly.
it.
Yeah. Exactly. So when you look at it from that point of view, he's making this transition to go, hey, I'm this really dope performer and entertainer across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm rock solid in my own right. My resume speaks for itself. But I've got the next 20 years that I want to present as whatever version of myself I'm going to be. This one's got to work.
Yeah.
Like this one has to work. I'm not doing any more MIBs. I might do I Am Legend, but this particular title, this was the thing that put me on.
Yeah.
So we got to make this work. And so they took their time.
It says something that he was also, as the star who has a lot of power, was willing to give some screen time to this younger group, let them actually have some impact, that he doesn't have to best them necessarily, that it is much more of a collaboration. And that says something about the ego of a very big star who could have easily said no. I need to be the smartest guy in the room.
Yep.
I need to be the hero all the time.
Yep.
Either me or Martin.
Yep.
And it wasn't. It was.
He was on The Breakfast Club the other day, and he actually alluded to this. He said, are you willing to let your ego die so that the real you can live?
Nah.
No, absolutely not.
We weren't asking you, Chris.
My ego is the real me. I'm pretty sure. I feel pretty confident about it.
It's super great.
Chris and I were saying last episode that there is nobody I can think of in major motion pictures who is given more goodwill than Will Smith when he does a stinker, when he does something that doesn't live up to expectations.
Yep. Yeah.
People are still willing to turn around and go, you know what? I'll still go back and see Will Smith in this next one because I still kind of know what I'm getting from him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't think of any other actor. Maybe Tom Cruise has that to a certain extent.
Maybe Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson?
he puts out a lot of bad movies.
I think he's exhausted his goodwill.
I don't know about him, yeah.
But who has had a longer career and been more at the top of the box office and had bigger high-profile bombs than Will Smith and were all willing to go, oof, that was a stinker. What's next, man?
Yeah.
There aren't that many stars in there. There aren't that many stars left that were built the way they were built.
Yeah,
it's true.
That are out there still doing it.
Yeah.
That have the opportunity to continue to try and do it like him or Tom. Like,
it's because they have that sort of charisma and that sort of star power.
Yeah, exactly. And, that was what I was about to say, is that they've invested into themselves as an artist first, but also as a human being. And I think that's the connection piece that all of us have with these Will Smith, Tom Cruise, is you see their evolution of their personal lives and their growth within who he was from Fresh Prince to who he is today.
Mm-hmm.
And you are emotionally invested
That's
in
true.
Him.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've actually seen him grow up, mature, yeah. or in some cases, depending on our ages,
yeah.
grew up with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you do feel a connection because no matter how good Will Smith is, even in dramas, he's always kind of going to be Will Smith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean he's not a good actor. Mm-hmm. But when you've got that much charisma, just personally, it's hard to overlook who you're watching.
Right.
Yeah. And he's managed that the way Tom Hanks has managed that.
Yes.
Yeah.
The way Tom Cruise has managed that. You know, those guys don't necessarily, they can only drop themselves into a role so far where you don't find them recognizable.
Sure.
And that's through no fault of their talent or their art. It's just because they are just this indelible face.
The human them is so... It has such a bright light. It's so potent.
Right. But that's okay because we feel connected to those people as people and we're willing to take the journey with them no matter what they do.
It's cachet also. I mean, once you've done a body of work that is that broad and over that many years, you've got the cachet to just, you can show up.
Yeah.
Yep.
There was
and people will go on the journey with you.
Right.
Yeah, true. There was on the late night show. Which late night show was it? Where was it? Jimmy Fallon.
Fallon, yeah, Tonight Show.
On the Tonight Show, where they did a bit with him and Will Smith going back all the way back to the Fresh Prince.
They did a rap. They did like
Prince.
A rap of all of Will's career,
of his entire career, and it's so entertaining and really well done.
And when you hear it back like that, you do have to go, "Holy cow!"
Yeah,
that guy.
Like he's done a lot.
I mean, he has
since 1988.
He had hits on the radio.
Yeah.
Big smash hits.
Yep. Hits.
Yep. I mean, like solid hits that people are going back to now, going, you know what? Yep. Those are pretty good. Yep. And he's talking a lot lately too about how he was doing rap in the most clean way possible.
Yeah,
like basically because it was his grandmother who said, you know, to show people how intelligent you are by not having to use those words to say what you need to say.
I actually remember that from like Rap Before Summertime came out. Mm-hmm. He'd like pulled that list out that his grandma was like, these are the words that I don't ever want to hear you say on any of your records. And he stuck to them like real hard and was like, you know,
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I've actually watched a little clip of a cat make a really legitimate case for Will being one of the top five all-time lyricists in rap.
Interesting.
And it's because of his ability to tell stories and images.
Yeah.
And the fact that you say his name and you can riddle off 3, 4, 5 songs that instantly come to mind. Mm-hmm. There's stories, you know, the lyrics, everybody knows them, and whereas
Can't
other artists...
you in it. Na, 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 na,
right?
Na, na, na.
Just having a hook and being able to...
He's
getting a little more credibility in that world because there are artists now who are going, you know what? That's what got me into rap. Yep. Like it or not, Will Smith got me into rap.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
By the way, we should mention also, I at least personally, I'd be more than willing to give Martin Lawrence a chance to be in more roles. He could play a great dad, and so I would see a drama with him. I'd like to see
Martin
him.
Is phenomenal,
right?
Phenomenal. Big Mama's House 4?
Not exactly.
Not Big Mama's House 4?
No,
we're not going
Blue
back.
Street. but yeah, I would watch him. I'd actually
I would
watch
love him for drama. His show to come back.
I hate they're rebooting just about everything.
Yeah.
Why not, Martin?
Yeah.
But you have to do it in a way.
Where they redid the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Remember that?
Yeah.
Did they? Like
they
really?
Yeah.
He did a trailer.
Oh. Yeah.
He did a trailer.
Right, right, right.
A millennial's version of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, boy.
So the jokes were gone.
Yeah.
The jokes, it was all turned into a drama.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And it was brilliant.
It was brilliant.
And it got Will's eye, and he was like, yo, develop it.
All right.
Like, he's working with the guy to help him develop it because it's a great storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Martin's got, look, any of these people, any of these actors that have that have been doing it for 20, 30 years and have reached a certain echelon of success financially and they're still in the game, still working, These people have the ability to turn that energy on or off when they want.
I agree with you.
They could tell story after story after story in different lane, and you'll be interested.
I would love to see Martin Lawrence do something similar to what Ray.
All I can think of is Brad Garrett. Ray Romano.
I would love to see Martin Lawrence do
something.
Ray. Jeez, wow. I would love to see Martin Lawrence do something like Ray Romano did with Men of a Certain Age, which was a phenomenal show that still allowed him some comic persona, but it also pushed him as an actor in a way that I found fascinating.
Yes.
And I believe Martin Lawrence could do something like that.
Oh, he could.
Delve into something a little more personal.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be a bad choice if they ever rebooted Rock to be the dad. Did you guys watch Rock?
Yeah.
I love that show.
He'd been great as Rock.
Yeah,
he'd been good in that.
Yeah.
If he goes,
I was saying that, you know, you could see he's a little uncomfortable when they're doing all the media stuff. That for me was it blew my mind because I'm like, you're Martin Lawrence.
Yeah.
I need you to know you're Martin Lawrence. You know, and so
he's kind of finding his way back in,
I think that's what it is.
Tentatively, let myself...
treading water type thing.
Yeah. What's the last thing he did before this? I mean, it's been... It might have been Big Mama's House.
Whatever Big Mama's last one was. I mean...
I can't remember.
This was tough.
2005 or something?
Stand-ups, when they stop doing stand-up, that's the equivalent of a singer stopping singing.
Yeah.
They don't have it. That's their connection into the material and into the word.
Mm-hmm.
So when they stop and their jokes or their way of telling jokes becomes old or no longer the current way of it gets outgrown.
Yeah.
Right.
It's hard for them to get back in and still have the potency that they had before. They've got to have a way of staying strong. Look, Eddie's fantastic. I think Eddie's phenomenal in everything that I've seen him in. But I also can see Eddie working. And the thing that's kept Eddie sharp is he's been over doing music.
Right.
Instead of doing stand-up. He's been, when he's not on screen, he's been over there doing music, dealing with his kids.
Yeah.
He's still funny as hell. That sharpness is still there in some respect. I think Martin's just taking a lot of time off.
Well, and it's, you know, it's interesting because even seeing Eddie Murphy back on SNL, like there were scenes that he did, there were skits that he did that worked, and there were skits that did not.
That did not.
At all. And I was like, oh boy, it's a good thing.
It's a muscle.
He's getting back into this and starting to flex it again. But
Martin Lawrence, most recent thing he did, apparently some sort of cameo in The Beach Bum, which I believe is a Matthew McConaughey film, as Captain Whack.
Okay.
And then he had a TV series with
he had a stand-up special in 2016.
Oh, wow.
Did he?
And his last film role before that was in 2011, Big Mama's Like Father Like Son. So he has not been working a ton.
Yeah.
But he had done within the last 5 or 6 years, he did a pilot with what's his name? Frasier.
Is that Partners?
Really? The Frasier?
Think so,
the Soul Man, untitled Martin Lawrence CBS sitcom. It never got a title. It never got that far.
Probably that one.
No, it got to either BET or one of the black channels.
Oh, it's Partners.
Partners.
An American sitcom starring Kelsey Grammer and Martin Lawrence on FX. Wow.
Yeah, clearly one of the black channels.
That's
got that all wrong.
That came and went. Oh, man. That came and went so fast that Jason couldn't even remember
which black channel that was on.
FX.
Although FX, never mind.
There's a lot of black comedy, so I'm going to count that.
Their logo is black and white.
And yellow. I don't know.
Can we, shut up.
I do want to say one thing about this before.
Final thoughts here.
Like, I think this year, 2020, has a ton of things that we have dug out of the 80s and 90s that we're bringing back to the screen, right? Top Gun, Bill and Ted,
Ghostbusters,
like all of that stuff. I think Bad Boys for Life has set a real high bar for the rest of them to hit, and I am so pleased to see that.
Yeah. So, any final thoughts on Bad Boys for Life?
Final thoughts.
By the way, we spent almost an hour talking about this movie. That just tells you that we just can't disregard it.
Yeah,
it's
very
inevitable.
True. I agree. I think it's at a really high bar. I want to watch it again because I feel like I was so excited about some of the scenes that I was still focused on those scenes when other scenes were happening.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I want to go back and watch it again. But definitely set a high bar. And,
who knew? Layers.
Layers.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Like an onion.
J.K. Jason E. Kelly.
I had a great time watching it. Not 100% sure. Look, I just got back from Miami from a bachelor party last year.
Uh-huh.
And when they went into the club, I was like, those don't look like Miami females. They're a little too skinny.
Okay.
Little too skinny.
Of all the criticisms.
Babe, I'm being honest.
Really?
Of all the things to talk about.
Yeah.
A little too thin.
Okay.
I was like,
With your betrothed partner in front of you here.
But like, if she saw what, if she was, if I pointed
it
out, she'd agree.
It was purely an aesthetic thing.
It's an aesthetic thing.
Okay.
She would agree with what I'm saying if I pointed out. She'd be like, oh yeah, you're right. There's not. Because that don't look like what Miami looks like.
Uh-huh.
I mean, visually it is, but the club scene that looked like more Atlanta than it did Miami, and they did shoot a lot.
They shot a lot in Atlanta.
Yeah. And I pick up on little details, but I have a feeling that that was one of the clubs in Atlanta and not in Miami.
Wow.
Specifics.
I mean, I also noticed that since I spend a lot of time in the clubs, so that makes perfect sense to me.
Just giving them hell in the club.
What I noticed in the club scene, I think I turned to my wife and go, I would never set foot in a place like that in my life.
Samesies. They wouldn't even let me in. Like if that ammo kid had tried to schmooze talk those bouncer ladies, they'd be like, sweetie, no
they would have said,
I love you, but
they would have looked at you and said, sir, deliveries are in the back. That's what they would say.
I guess I'll just take it around the back.
Hey, how fun it is that we talked about something that wasn't Marvel / Star Wars, which, by the way, Marvel was all the trailers were at the screening
all
I saw today.
All of them.
Yo, Morbius looks real good.
I don't know.
I'm excited.
I disagree. I think Morbius is looking real bad.
What?
And
I
did. And doubly so because they're like, Sony's like, from the studio that brought you Spider-Man, Far From Home, Spider-Man Homecoming. I'm like, bullshit, that was Marvel. And then also Venom, that movie that we did that should have been done 25 years ago.
But do you see what they're doing, though? Because I said this to Tia when I was watching. I went, oh, I see what Sony's doing.
Yeah.
They are back engineering a cinematic universe for Spidey.
Yep.
They're going to start 100%. With all of his villains.
Yep.
And then they're going to drop him in the middle of
which
it.
Which I think is
when they snag him back.
Has been kind of the plan, right? Because they've got a Black Cat in the works. They've got a Silver Sable, I think, supposed to be working on too.
Yep.
And then a second Venom coming out. So we'll have Venom, Carnage, Silver Sable, the Vulture.
Yep. When I saw the Vulture pop up in the trailer.
In the trailer.
This is what they're doing.
I found zero of them that compelling or interesting. And even Black Widow now, I've seen that trailer a couple of times and it's like, oh, that could be fun. But I don't know I need to be there on opening weekend, unless one of you guys say we're going to do a podcast, and then I'll go.
There was a Birds of Prey trailer before.
I did not
see
ours.
Yeah.
And,
the trailer I saw that I liked had nothing to do with the one non-Marvel trailer I saw is the Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae action comedy Lovebirds
that made me laugh.
It's high concept. It looks dumb. It looks kind of like Game Night looked.
Game Night meets Stuber.
Yeah, there we go.
I didn't see that one.
Look that up.
Okay.
That looks fun.
Or Date Night? Maybe Game Night or Date Night? Maybe Date Night more than Game Night. Date Night was Tina Fey and
I'm saying looks like kind of Game Night where, you know,
Jason
a
Bannon
night goes, yeah,
yeah
where night goes wrong.
That's what happened with Date Night, too. They stole this couple's table and then they...
I did not see Date Night.
It's cute.
Can we have this conversation off the air,
no.
Chris? All right.
How dare you?
It'll be a two-hour podcast.
You know what? Cut down my little impression. It'll be like
just pause right here and go watch Date Night and Game Night and then circle back for the ending of the podcast.
Note to self, I'm just going to do a little bit of a edit all that stuff out with Chris. Edit the entire Will Smith impression from Jason. All right, now we're back. Hey,
all right.
I'm too lazy to edit this thing. You guys have listened to it.
True.
Hey, thank you for joining us. Who knows what we'll be back for next time, but the next time we have a really interesting, big movie or whatever pop culture event might happen, who knows who'll be back in here again. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Can I get everybody go around and tell people how they can find you if you want to be found?
I mean, I love being found. It makes me so happy.
Uh-huh.
The McGahan everywhere. McGahan.
Yep.
Teal, do you want people to find you?
I don't know that I need to be found, but thank you for having me.
it has been a nonprofit.
But yes, you can find the Peg Effect on IG.
And what is
the Peg Effect? Is a nonprofit that really helps the homeless. We create goodie bag mobiles, and it's a hygiene care package for the homeless that you keep with you while you're on the go.
Fantastic.
And you pass that out. So that is at the Peg Effect. IG.
We will put the link in our description.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for that. Jason.
JKelly72, wherever you go on social medias, except for Twitter, because I canceled that shit.
Good man.
I did.
You're a stronger man than I.
Down to two.
I just stopped looking at it.
I can't anymore.
Yeah, I don't even know that I can log into my Twitter anymore. It still exists. If you want to tag me in things, and I'll get notifications about it, but I don't log into
just
it.
Let it go.
Hey, and I am, you know where to find me. I the Larry Morgan on Instagram is probably the best place to go where you can see dumb pictures of things. That's it, guys. Thank you so much for snarking with me
Thanks
about Bad Boys for Life.
Good men for life. Oh, I had so many jokes about prequels. We slide together. We die together. When they're little kids.
Keep them going. I'm still recording.
You know, when
this
they get
will
into,
not fade out at
when
this
they,
point.
When they get into skateboarding, it's, you know, we shred together, we dead together.
Keep them coming, man.
When they're in grade school.
Everybody's still
like,
listening.
Like, they're growing fruit, and they're like, it's ripe together, we die together.
We shoot together, we poop together.
Bad boys,
bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.